When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is August 20th, and this is the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. And welcome back to the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. My name is Evan Marinofsky, back for another week of Bruins Talk. And just a disclaimer before we get into today's podcast, I had all four of my wisdom teeth taken out on Wednesday. So, like, 4 days before we recorded this. So, my voice might sound a little weird. I can't really fully open my mouth. This is obviously the Michael Jordan flu game, Kurt Schilling bloody sock, and then there's the Marinofsky Wisdom Teeth podcast, which will be this. So this will live in with legends. This is going to be incredible. You know, I'm just fighting through it this entire podcast, just terrible mouth pain. I can barely open my mouth, but I'm just fighting through. I got the ice on my face as I'm talking. It's really great, I'm telling you. But at any rate, there's not much to talk about with the Bruins. So I'm sick of constructing the salary cap and doing that because I don't think that's great listening. So this week, I had on Marissa and Jamie of the Boston Herald. And it's getting to the point where we're at the end of a decade. We're at the end of a decade, 2010 to 2019. Obviously, this is the back half of 2019. And now it's time to take a look back. So that's going to be happening a lot in different articles I write for clnsmedia.com. We'll probably do some videos for our YouTube channel, and we're going to do some podcasts dedicated to that as it gets closer. So why not do it right now? So we started not from an all-team perspective. We started from the biggest disappointments of the decade, which spanned from 2010 to now. And I think we both put up stuff, me and Marissa, that probably wouldn't think of. Definitely let us know on Twitter or wherever you want to let us know at. If you disagree, if you think there are disappointments we didn't talk about, what was sort of your biggest? I think there's one that's fresh in people's minds that might actually be number one. Marissa disagrees. So at any rate, let's dive right in. And here's my conversation with Marissa and Jemmy. And we're here with Marissa and Jemmy. Marissa, what is up?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, good. What are you? How's your summer going?
Pretty good. I'm currently in Annapolis, Maryland. Just been kind of chilling and running around and not being around hockey rinks, which is wild.
Has that been tough, sort of, you know, you're doing hockey all the time and now you're sort of just like wound down? I think Jack Edwards was talking about that a few weeks ago.
It's very, very weird because you have like these months at a time where it's like your entire life and you're anchored to it. And it's, like, super stable, and then all of a sudden you have nothing and have to figure out, like, what to do, and it's very, very weird.
Weren't you on call for a really long time just in case Charlie McAvoy or Brandon Carlo resigned?
Yeah, basically, like, days I'm working, I was just sitting there, like, can someone do something? It's funny because my first vacation I took at the start of July, I was, like, waiting the whole 4th of July week, and nothing happened, and I was so bored. And then literally the night, like, my first vacation night at 11 p.m., Danton Heinen signed. And I was like, yeah, of course that's going to happen now. So now that like I'm not working, I'm fully ready for like McAvoy's definitely going to sign and I'm not going to be able to do anything with it. So that's how these things work. It's very weird.
When do you think that'll happen? You think it happens like late at night? You think it happens in the middle of the day when it's convenient for everybody? When do you think both of these things occur?
Oh, it's going to happen at a super inconvenient time, like Friday at 6 p.m. or like a Sunday morning or like 11 p.m. at night, like Danton Heinen. It's definitely not going to be easy for anyone.
I agree. I bet it does too. All right. So for this podcast, we really don't have much to talk about. Obviously, there's legitimately nothing happening with the Bruins.
Like, we could talk about how Carson Coleman is going to be the second line right wing.
That's for later this month, and I don't want to talk about that right now. What I do want to talk about, though, is, you know, lately, I've been seeing these all-decade teams done by The Athletic. And, you know, you sort of start to think like, holy crap, we're getting to the end of the decade. And that's the time where we look back and we sort of, you know, recollect things that maybe we forgot about. And this is going to be the first podcast for Bruins Beat done on looking back at the decade. So 2010 to now 2019. 2019 is basically over. Pretty much is. All right. I don't expect a ton monumental to happen in the regular season up until December. So these seem kind of safe. Today, Marissa and I, we are going to look at the biggest disappointments of the decade. So I'm going to start. And I think the biggest disappointment actually happened this year. The biggest disappointment of the decade, and you could maybe even like put this into the whole Bruins franchise, was losing Game 7 against St. Louis on home ice in the Stanley Cup Final. That has to be the worst, right?
I mean, I don't know. I've like talked to a lot of people about this, and I really struggle to be too up in arms about losing a Game 7. It's the final day of the year there could ever be hockey, and the Bruins were there. So it's tough for me to completely call it a disappointment. I know they were favorites in the series. That game obviously just went horribly wrong. It's a disappointment the way they performed. But I don't know, like, I've been on a few different shows. I've talked to a few different people, and I struggle to be like, yeah, that was the worst, because they were playing on the final day of the season, and I think anyone would have loved to be there.
I look at it, and I say, the cup is in the building. You're on home ice. You have a chance to win it at home. Again, the Blues play better that series, 100%. But on paper, the Bruins are the better team. And you have it on home ice. The cup's there. You know, an easy road to the cup final. You know, one of the last shots at it for Marchand, Chara, Bergeron, that whole core. And it's not even like it ends in overtime. It's not even like it's close. That game was over in the first. And to me, the letdown of the game, the letdown of the situation, I know they made it all the way to the cup. I know there was no hockey the next day, which was a tragedy to everybody. But I just can't get over. I think that's the biggest disappointment of this decade for the Bruins. And there have been a lot, but the magnitude of that, I think, was just too much.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I have a lot of trouble with any form of success being used as a disappointment, just because, like, there are so many teams, like the Ottawa Senators would love to like be in the playoffs, you know what I mean? So
well,
I don't know. I just have trouble with that always.
So obviously you don't agree with me on that. What would you say is probably the biggest disappointment of the decade for the Bruins?
For some reason, what stands out to me is when they lost to the Capitals. That series, for some reason, the way that ended, like if I'm thinking about just off of memory alone of like what felt the worst at the time, that one's pretty up there. And then the second round loss to Montreal, I think in 2014, I think it was. Those two, to me, just stand out as a team that should have gone further than it did.
See, I made a top 10 list, which I'm not going to say fully in this podcast because I want to save it for an article. You know, I'll got to get those page views.
Hashtag content.
But I don't look at the 2012 one as a big – I didn't even put it in my top 10 simply because – it's the year after they went to the cup, they won the cup, the year after. That just didn't seem as bad to me. The Capitals were a better team, in my opinion, and they won the cup the year before. It wasn't that big a disappointment. They were out in the first round. Obviously, it was no overtime winner at home, which sucked, but I didn't put that in my top 10. I will say, though, that Game 7 loss to Montreal is high on the list because that's won the President's Trophy, and that was another no-show game in Game 7. That was terrible.
You look at this year for the Bruins in the window they had to get through Toronto, Columbus, Carolina, and then they get to St. Louis, which I think a lot of people considered the Bruins to have the advantage in that series. Obviously, it didn't go that way, but you look at the window of the teams they would have played. That was a year where that was, on paper, a better Bruins team in the regular season. And they definitely had a path there where they beat the Red Wings and pretty much dismantled them. And then Montreal, and that would have been a really good window of opportunity that year. So I think, like, the more I think about it, that probably has to be the most disappointing. Aside from, I don't know, do we count the years they didn't make the playoffs? Because that's probably, like, worse than all of it, right?
So I classify disappointment as anything. It could be a signing. It could be a season. It could be a season for a specific person. It could be a game. It could be whatever. So this isn't just limited to playoff losses or whatever. Because on my list, I mean, my number two is the 2014-15 and 15-16 Bruins. I couple them together, even though they were two that was two lost seasons, pretty much. I mean, 14-15, like Ty Anderson was saying this when he was on 2 weeks ago, he was like, you know, if you had said to anybody in 2016 that the Bruins would be in the Cup Final in 2019, they'd be like, what are you talking about? Because after the 14-15 season, you know, it felt like the core was dismantling. They traded away Lucic, they gave up on Dougie Hamilton, all this stuff, and you're like, and then 15-16, you know, they show the starting lineup for the Winter Classic that year, and it's like a bunch of just Providence guys. So, in my opinion, yes, those two seasons are bigger disappointments, in my opinion, the loss to Montreal, but still big disappointments.
I'd also put in just like, I know they made the playoffs 16-17, but that Ottawa series was brutal.
Yes, but I don't know. I think the turnaround they made with Cassidy getting hired, I remember after that series feeling like, okay, they have something. McAvoy looked outstanding. Yes, they blew it, and they lost in overtime, I feel like 100 times that whole series. But to me, I didn't look at that as – I looked at that as an accomplishment that they even got to the playoffs, because that team was on a course to just miss it for the third straight year, right?
Right, yeah, no, that's reasonable, just because of Cassidy's presence alone and building for the future and all that.
So the rest of my list, I don't want to give it all away. I know I'm probably going to end up giving it all away. I have stuff on here. I'm not going to say where it's ranked, but I actually put on here, it's towards the bottom of my list, but this gets forgotten. But do you remember how bad the 2016 Winter Classic was? That game That game was so bad, and I think people forget it, because it's just a game, but it's the Winter Classic, and it's Bruins, Habs at Gillette in New England, and they lose 4 or 5 to 1. I mean, it was a crappy game.
It was one of the worst regular season games I ever remember the Bruins playing.
It was terrible. And who had Jimmy Hayes had the one goal, and it was just
depressing in and of itself.
Exactly. And it was kind of the 15-16 Bruins in a microcosm. Like all this, not that they had all this hype, but they were expected to do so much more, and nothing happened. And that was the game in itself.
Montreal scored like twice in 2 minutes, didn't they?
I honestly, Marissa, I feel like my brain scrubs my memory of that game, so I don't like, you know, like I.
And actually, just checking on this, it wasn't Jimmy Hayes who scored the goal, but do you want to guess who it was? You're on the right vein.
I swore it was Jimmy Hayes. Was it Matt Bolesky?
It was Matt Bolesky.
It was? Really?
Adam McQuaid and Ryan Spooner.
I knew McQuaid shot it. I knew it was a tip. But I didn't remember. I thought it was Jimmy Hayes who tipped it. And that's so funny that
Jimmy Hayes took a roughing penalty.
Oh, there you go. At least he did something. But I remember Mike Condon had that incredible glove save on Ryan Spooner at the end of one of the periods on a power play. I mean,
Matt Bolesky was named third starter of the game.
Was he really?
It's incredible.
What's funny is I was looking at Matt Bolesky's stats the other day, and I'm going to pull them up just to like make sure I'm not like losing my mind. And his first season in Boston, like everyone refers to his last year in Anaheim, which was 2014-15, is his career year. But he had more points than he did in Anaheim the year before when he first came to Boston. So in 15-16, he had 15 goals and 37 points. I'm not going to say that's anything, and I'm not going to defend him because he eventually was a bust. But, like, he did put out a higher production level his first year in Boston than he did his last year in Anaheim, which was his contract year.
It's actually incredible just because I look at the numbers now, too. In 16-17, he only played 49 games, but he only had 8 points.
And he was a minus 10.
How did that even happen?
I don't know. His fall, like his drop off, I wasn't covering the team then. I don't think, were you covering the team then?
Not full time, but I was around.
Yeah. So like, I totally forget his drop off because like, I always associate Matt Bolesky as just being suck and more suck, but like he didn't fully suck in 15-16. But then there's just the sheer just like cliff he jumped off of in 2016-17 was like something I forgot. I just thought he was always bad.
No, he was tolerable for a while.
Yeah. So Getting off of this, another thing I want to bring up is the Tyler Seguin trade, because that's going to be one that I think a mm-hmm. lot of people put at the top of their list. But I was looking back, and so I'll give this away. I put Tyler Seguin trade, I put it at fifth on my list, because
okay.
Louis Erickson was good enough to be something legitimate they got back. I mean, he was their leading point getter in 2015-16 with 63 points. In 13-14, he had 37 points, which really wasn't great. 14-15, he had 47. So, I mean, he wasn't amazing and he was not worth it, but he gave them something. And so that's why I don't put the Seguin trade higher, because they technically did get something in return for Seguin. It just wasn't as good as Seguin, and Seguin exploded with the Stars.
My favorite thing about that trade is, if you go down the trade tree of what they ended up with in the end, like, the final tally is Tyler Seguin for Jimmy Hayes.
That's right. That's incredible that that actually
That's
was
my
like,
favorite thing ever.
I love trade trees. Like, Fluto had one the other day.
Oh, me too.
Like a month ago on the Cam Neely trade. It's still like, I forget who they have right now, but like, since that trade, which I forget what year it was, since then the Bruins have still been like reaping benefits and getting people from it. And I think that's so funny that like, that's still going like over 20 years.
That's incredible. Did they trade Jimmy Hayes or no, they didn't trade him after that.
Jimmy Hayes was,
so he's the final piece. Yeah, so he was the final piece. That's what I thought.
Because he was bought out. Cause didn't they trade Riley Smith for Jimmy Hayes?
Yes, that's why it's the final piece.
My God.
And they let the defenseman go. Who was the defenseman they got in that trade? Joe Morrow?
Joe Morrow. What a
they
weird...
They let him go. They didn't trade him. So I know that they didn't get a return for him. And
didn't
then there was
to...
the other guy who ended up in Edmonton.
Was that Frazier?
Yeah, Frazier. Yeah. They put him on waivers.
I only remember.
So that was all cut off.
I only remember him because the NHL Network was like analyzing the trade, and one of the analysts' last name was Frazier, and he was like, "Oh, that's my favorite part of the trade." And I remember thinking like, "Oh, what a loser!" But then that's how I always remember the name. There's nothing else. I mean, the trade. It's just. But so I don't put that as high. I put that at fifth, but I would be hesitant to put it higher. It was crap. But, like, they did get something back from that, you know? Like, it wasn't, like,
what about, not to jump totally, but I don't want to forget. What about, do you have the 2015 draft?
So, I put that right after the Seguin trade. Because.
Yeah, that has to be there.
Oh, yeah. But, they got DeBrusque. They got Carlo. They just blew it on those two picks after, which, you know, looks even worse now because Matt Barzal was the sixth.
Or it was DeBrusque there.
Well,
in
what do you mean?
2015.
DeBrusque was 2015.
It was, so that draft, that was Boral, DeBrusque, Senishin.
Yep. So, okay, yeah. So DeBrusque wasn't the first pick they had. It was the middle one. So, and then you got Carlo later in the draft. So that's what kind of had the Brandon Carlo pick in the second round kind of made me hesitate from putting it higher. But it's still a big disappointment that they missed on those two of three picks they had in the first round.
You look at the guys who got drafted after. Barzal, we know, but Kyle Connor, Thomas Chabot, Brock Besser. It's brutal.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I forgot about that. So Thomas Chabot, obviously.
Sebastian Aho was in that draft. He was in the second round, but still.
Is he really?
Yeah, he was drafted two picks before Carlo.
That's incredible that they – because everyone thinks of Barzal simply because, like, he was picked right after Senishin. But then after Barzal was Kyle Connor, then Thomas Chabot, and then Colin White to the Senators at 21, Besser at 23, Konechny at 24 to the Flyers. Oh, my God. So
it's brutal. The more you look at it, the worse it gets.
So that's the thing. Maybe the 2015 draft would go higher, but I don't know what I would – I don't know what I would swap it out with, because that's bad, but I feel like the other things – they still got something from the 2015 draft.
Well, yeah, Carlo and DeBrusque, we look at the rest of the draft for the Bruins, too. They got JFK, and obviously that didn't work out. I mean, I guess technically TBD, but it seems like he's not going to be back with the Bruins at any time soon. Jeremy Lauzon was fine when he was up. They just have so much depth at defense that it doesn't – it's kind of irrelevant.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, Carlo and DeBrusque definitely make it not a total loss, but you look at, like, who they could have had, and it's absolutely brutal. Interacting, I mean, like, it's all hindsight 2020. You never know. But I remember being in college and screaming at the television, like, Matt Barzal is right there. And then the Islanders trade up to get him, and it seemed like the most obvious thing ever.
Well, I just remember Sinishin was like, that was like a project. Like, that was a huge stretch pick by them because they had three in a row. And I remember being like, it's the first round. Like, why would you do that? And
the
you're
Bruins are a master of that.
That's the thing. And they always try to
like
do
Trent
that.
Frederick later on. I mean, John Beecher obviously was not on anyone's draft board, even though the more like I hear about him and the more I see him, I'm kind of like, yeah, I get it a little bit. But still, he wasn't on anyone's draft board. So they've done this multiple times.
That's their thing. And it cost them here because obviously Barzal, Connor, Shabbat, Konechny, Besser are all big names, you know, in the NHL. So, yeah, the 2015 draft to me is 100% one of the biggest disappointments of the decade, simply because they've had missed first-round hits. But when you have three consecutive and you blow it that badly, like, I look at that and I'm just like, how do you even manage to do that?
Look, I just looked up when they drafted Trent Frederick and who they could have got after him, but the rest of that draft also looks terrible.
Oh, Trent Frederick's draft?
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, like, guys they could have taken instead, Alex DeBrincat, but even still, like, he went, like, 10 picks later, so that's not an obvious one. And then Carter Hart, but, like, who cares?
Yeah.
There's really nothing that stands out where actually, like, they did their best.
That's the thing, like, when there's a draft and you miss on one pick in the first round and the rest of, there's, like, you know, like, 15 picks after your pick and like two of the 15 are really good. Like, I don't really put that on the team because that's just, you have no idea. But when you have three straight and then the three taken literally right after your 15th pick, after the third pick they had in the draft in that first round, the three after, when they are all superstars in this league, that's when you're like, how did you miss that?
Especially because like everybody knew.
Another funny thing that I'm just noticing from this, and maybe my stats are wrong, I'm on Hockey Reference right now. If you look at it, so Jacob Zboril was the Bruins' 13th pick, 13th overall pick. He was with St. John of the Q. Thomas Chabot, so Zboril's a defenseman. At 18, the Senators picked Thomas Chabot, who was also on St. John, who's also a defenseman. They were scouting the defense core of St. John with Zboril, and they missed on Thomas Chabot. Like, I think that's an even bigger storyline that a lot of people look over.
Yeah, I kind of, whenever talking about that draft, it's always Barzal. Yeah, I mean, I saw Kyle Connor a lot in college, and I remember thinking at the time, too, he's right there. And then, like, it didn't really kind of hit me until at some point last year with Chabot. I was like, wait, he was in that draft, too? And then I was like, oh, man, like, that's just as bad as the rest of them.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking the fact that if they're scouting Zboril's games, like Shabbat's on the ice as well. There's nothing that says they can't look at him as him too, and they just missed on that. So I like, that's something that gets overlooked a lot. Obviously, everyone looks right at Barzal, but the miss on Thomas Chabot almost maybe seems more heinous in a way. But I mean, who really knows? Something that's going to get overlooked, I think, a lot when people look at a list of disappointments for this decade. And I put this in my top 10. I'm not gonna say where I put it. I gotta get that content. Gotta get that stuff up on the website. Gotta get those page views. The Philadelphia debacle in 2010. That 3-0.
Oh, I didn't know if we counted that as this decade.
I count 2010 as this decade, right? That's the decade.
Okay, then yeah, that's number one. That was the most brutal, awful thing ever.
I didn't put that at number one simply because they won the cup the next year. And a lot of people say, like, Mark Recchi said, like, oh, yeah, like, that was a big reason why we won the cup the next year. Like, we were all driven. So I didn't put that as...
still, you're up 3-0 and you blow it. And then you're up 3-0 in game 7 and you blow it. I think that's, like, the worst thing that can happen to you in sports.
Yeah, so I think a big part of that that also makes that sting even more is if they'd won that series, which they, all by all accounts, should have, they go on to play the Canadiens, who, I mean, they had Halak in net. The Flyers disposed of them. I don't know how quickly, but they beat them. And I think the Bruins would have had a fairly good shot against them. And that would have been a crazy Eastern Conference final between the Bruins and the Canadiens. That would have been nuts.
Can you imagine?
insane. That would have been absolutely insane. And even cooler with that was in 07-08, the Bruins and Canadiens played in the first round. They went to seven games. And then in 08-09, people forget the Bruins beat the Canadiens in four games. So it would have come down to 09-10, where they would have played for the third straight year in the playoffs, and it would have been the Eastern Conference Finals. And then they played the next year in 2011. So that would have been so cool, I think. And then they would have went on to play the Blackhawks, which, I don't know. I mean, the Blackhawks at Niemi, they were kind of just starting up as a dynasty.
We've seen that story before. We've seen how that goes, Bruins Blackhawks.
Well, at any rate, I didn't put it up as high, but like in the context of 2010, that was one of the worst things that had ever happened to the Bruins. Like that was
horrible. There was no excuse for that.
I would debate putting that higher, but I feel like everyone forgets about that because they've won a cup since and been to two more, right?
I don't know. This year in Carolina in the Eastern Conference Finals, when the Bruins won 3-0, there was like this entire narrative about, oh, is this like the Flyer series? And people kept asking about it. And I was like, this is so not related to anything. It's amazing. But people were talking about it like crazy.
I think people are talking about it partially because there was nothing going on in that Hurricane series. Like, there really weren't a lot of storylines to jump at. And it was just kind of boring. I mean, I know people are going to jump at me for that. But, I mean, it was not the most intriguing matchup with the Hurricanes. I just feel like a lot of stuff from 2010 gets forgotten because of 2011. Like, I was doing top 10 goals, and I'm not going to say where I put stuff, but there was a lot from the 2010 playoff run and that first series with Buffalo that was actually electric that people forget about, I think, a lot.
That Buffalo series was great.
An incredible series. And they weren't – and the Bruins were a 6 seed. The Sabres were a 3 seed, and they – what, did they beat them in six?
I don't remember. Yeah, I believe I won six games.
And the Bruins were up 3-1 at one point. I'm actually going to look that up right now because that was a series that, I mean, and you had Ryan Miller who was playing out of his mind back then. And they weren't, and he'd just come off the Olympics.
Yeah, that was six games.
Six games. And they were not supposed to win that series, and they did. And that was wild. I just remember that being crazy.
It was.
You mentioned the Blackhawks. The 2 goals in 17 seconds in 2013. That has to be something that you would...
Again, like, I don't want to contradict myself a ton because, like I said, you get to the Stanley Cup, I have trouble viewing it as a disappointment. But if we're going to call St. Louis a disappointment, I think that Blackhawks series was much more disappointing.
See, I disagree simply because the Blackhawks were a wagon then. And the Bruins were kind of, but the Blackhawks were like another level of it. I mean, they were
like, that felt like more missed opportunities. Like there was I think it was game four that went to overtime. Where it was like 5-5 and Johnny Boychuk tied it. It goes to overtime.
Yes.
Probably missed the open net. Like that one just stands out to me as one of the most disappointing games in Bruins history that I can recall. And then obviously the 2 goals at the end of game six there, those two things being in the same series to me, I don't remember two like iconically awful moments in the St. Louis series like that.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean,
that was their game where St. Louis just played better. That was just, to me, like, again, that doesn't bother me because I'm like, okay, well, they played better and they won. Where the Chicago series, you were just like instances where you're like, oh, they could have had that.
Well, the Bruins could have had a chance in game five if Achari doesn't get that phantom trip. When he gets tripped.
Right, but that's also like nothing of their fault. So, I don't know. To me, that it's different. And it's going to different territory for me.
I put the Blues one higher simply because they should have won that series. The Blackhawks were the better. Like, I just felt they were.
I don't know. Like, we say they should have won the series, but why? St. Louis played better.
Going into the series, the Bruins were the favorite. Going into 2013, the Blackhawks were the favorite. That's sort of what I'm going off.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Just, there's so many elements of that St. Louis series where I just feel like the Bruins mishandled some things. Like, I think David Backes probably never should have been in that series. I didn't like dressing the seven defensemen. There were things, but I don't know. As far as from, like, we're talking, like, from a disappointment, we're talking, like, a pure heartbreak standpoint, right?
Yes.
And then I'd say Chicago was worse, I think.
See, I think you could make an argument that the entire St. Louis series was a disappointment in some ways. Because What's funny is that series started out, the Bruins won game one. The Torey Krug has that huge hit. Everyone's talking about it. You know, and then they go to St. Louis in game three. They trounce them on home ice. And when that series changed in game four, when Ryan O'Reilly, a minute into the game, scores a wraparound on Tuukka Rask, and that's when it was like, wait a second, we have a new series. And I think for on it was a disappointment for the Bruins. So, I mean, I characterize game seven because I'm trying to look at one specific moment. But, I mean, the whole series, as you said, could be argued as a total disappointment.
It's just like, to me, sports goes two ways. And sometimes the other team plays better, does the right thing more. And it's more of a reflection of that than anything else. And while, again, I think there are some things the Bruins messed up, for sure. And there are moments in that game seven where, like, Marchand messing up on that line change at the end of the first period, there are definitely elements of that. But I just look at it as a whole, and I'm like, well, let's just play better, and sometimes that happens.
So, to close things out, I want to ask you, are there any disappointments that we didn't mention that you would probably put if you were to do a top 10 list?
I think we covered everything I could think of. The Flyers one, to me, is the ultimate, and I kind of didn't realize we were doing 2010 for whatever reason, but I would have jumped on that right away. To me, that's just, like, that's the worst. And then the draft, like I mentioned, that ranks up there because that's just like long-term repercussions. So I think, and then the Washington series, I mentioned, I know you disagreed, but for me, just the whole vibe of that series, it ended and reminded me so much of the Carolina series where Scott Walker won it.
Oh, yes.
It was so parallel. It was like spooky. So that's why I had that up there. But like, those are my top three off the top of my head, I guess.
See, my parallel for the Blues series, I don't remember a lot of 09 when they lost to the Hurricanes. I don't know how old I was, and I just don't remember a lot of it. But the parallel I had was the Canucks in 11. Like, they lose game seven on home ice. You know, this upstart team. I mean, the Canucks were the much better team in 2011 on paper. The Bruins, I thought, were the better team on paper coming into this series. And then, you know, the Bruins out-tough the Canucks in 11. I thought the Blues out-tough the Bruins in 2019. So it was just that series gave me the vibes of what I got from the Canucks in 2011. But I see
that's not a bad comparison at all. I never thought of that, but you're not wrong on that.
Yeah, I tweeted that after game seven, and I got killed for it. People were so mad said that.
I think everyone was getting killed left and right on Twitter after that game.
That was the only game that I've left the Garden losing followers. Like, I didn't gain any. I lost 10 followers that night. I was like, what did I do wrong? And then I was like, wait a second, the Bruins just, like, lost the Stanley Cup. So, like, it's probably not my fault.
Oh, I've lost, like, 50 followers this summer. And I'm like, it just has to be the repercussions of the team losing, I guess.
Yeah, I remember I did one of the Bruins beat after the Cup. Did like astronomically way worse than the ones before it. And I was like, was it because of like something I said? Was it like, and I'm like, what? Like, people just don't want to hear it. Like, they lost.
Everyone's just sad.
Everybody was so pissed that they like could have won game seven at home. And that's why it's my number one disappointment. I know it's not yours, but that's why I think for me, it has to be it. Anyways, Marissa, thank you so much for joining. Hope you have a great rest of your summer. Do you want to plug anything?
Thank you. Read the Boston Herald, please. That's about it.
We love the Boston Herald. It's a great publication, and Marissa and Steve Conroy do a tremendous job. Anyways, for CLNS Media and Bruins Beat, I'm Evan Marinofsky. Have a great rest of your week.